Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Hi, my name is Sue Forster, and I'm a managing partner at the Healthcare Initiative, and I've been with the firm now 7.5 years, and I lead executive search for those high-stake critical leadership roles in healthcare.
Sue, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in, talk a little bit about your current role, the Healthcare Initiative, and all that great stuff you guys are currently doing. Give us a thumbnail version of your career today.
Sure. At the Healthcare Initiative, we do nationwide search for leadership roles in primarily for health systems. We sometimes get into the payer network as well. But any role that's out there at the leadership level, we can look to fill that both permanent and on an interim basis. Background, thanks for asking. I have been in the human capital space since the Stone Age, John. I cut my teeth working at ITT. It was 3270 IBM compatible terminals and controllers. I was in college and got exposed to so much in that role, rotating around the organization. I was involved with mergers and acquisitions, doing the due diligence and the cultural integration. We did startups, we took manufacturing offshore, shut down businesses, doing reductions in workforces. Got exposed to everything. In my recruitment process, I always happened to notice that after about 10 years, I kind of felt people got a little stodgy. So at about 9.5 year mark, I got real itchy and felt, I love you, I gotta leave. And then I went to work for a software company, didn't ask the right questions, and found myself day one, oh, we forgot to tell you. We're getting acquired and you have to lay off a third of your workforce. And so that was great experience as well, being on the other side of the due diligence process. And then from there, I was recruited as I mentioned, the Stone Age, we were just launching personal computers, and I got recruited away to do some growth and scaling NMS, both domestically and internationally for Compaq Computer. And I ended up spending 10 years in Latin America as a consultant after leaving Compaq, after getting that started up. Lived in Venezuela, Colombia, Rio and Sao Paulo, Brazil, and Mexico City. Came back after 9/11, specifically back to Denver after my father had a stroke. Bless his heart, he's going to be 91 in a couple weeks, and he's still going strong. But I landed here at my current firm, and then was recruited away to work for a health system. The CEO there wanted me to come in and build a center of excellence for bringing executive search in-house as we built that business from $2 billion to $5 billion over the period I was there. And then I came back to my firm and set up my practice in healthcare.
Wow, what a I appreciate that background. What a diverse you know, career timeline. Congrats on all of your successes. And, you know, with the Healthcare Initiative, you mentioned you lead the executive search. Obviously, you've been in the human capital space for quite some time. So you've seen the industry go through various trends and cycles and whatever the case may be. Talk to us a little bit about your, you know, some of the trends that you currently follow, that you're currently researching, that's very interesting for you in this space.
Oh, sure. So I guess COVID's been a major game changer for a lot of people, just in the sense of going remote. So we struggled in the past getting our clients and candidates to do virtual interviews. And I was talking to a physician at the Cleveland Clinic, asking him what had changed for him during COVID. And he had shared and lamented kind of the similar journey with telehealth and how they struggle getting people to do virtual encounters. They were maybe at 5% and trying to eke it up to 8%. And overnight, they went to about 80% virtual encounters. And we went to about 100% virtual interviews with our clients and candidates. And it really helped efficiency helped with that connection versus just the phone call on that first round, or even doing the airport interviews, cattle mill, really saved a lot of time and money. So that was a good benefit. We even had people actually picking up and moving sight unseen to places through virtual real estate tours as well during COVID. So I do think that we'll see more of that remote work and virtual interviewing and those meetings. So that's been very helpful.
Well, that's very interesting, and definitely some of the trends that we've seen, especially coming out of pandemic, and how companies hire, onboard a lot of that great stuff, which I want to talk to you a little bit further about.
Sure.
When we talk about kind of the overall trend, the future of work, we've seen organizations seeking that flexibility, ability to scale up or down, I guess, mm-hmm. in certain situations. In a very fast, efficient, and nimble way. So with contractors, consultants, gig workers, freelancers, the overall contingent workforce trend, talk to us a little bit about your thoughts around future of work. Where do you see this going, and how can companies benefit from that?
Yeah, sure. We have seen a lot of increase with the need for interim or contingent workforce, especially during COVID. We've always been in that space, but it's really ramped up substantially. I would say that as we're moving into the future, I think I saw a statistic by 2024, 50% of the workforce would be contingent labor. And so what that means is, I think that's gonna be a tremendous impact on the organization and the engagement. But one of the things we saw in healthcare during COVID, pre-COVID, we would do a lot of flex pooling of, say, nurses and move them from areas where, the census was down in one hospital and it was up somewhere else. We could flex them where they were needed. But we saw something really neat occur in healthcare where those areas that were really being impacted majorly, like up in the Northeast with COVID, there were other parts of the country that didn't have those cases. And we'd send plane loads of nurses to those locations. It was a great experience for those teams to go there and have that experience. It increased their training as well, but it also really helped out in those communities where they just didn't have the staff. So I think even flex teams on a more national level are going to be a trend of the future as we're able to operationalize that in a more effective manner.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Can definitely see a lot of, things that, or, organizations that are going through these days, and the overall, some of the stats that you gave from the contingent workforce perspective definitely seem interesting in terms of what's going to come next and happen overall in the industry from that standpoint. So as we, shifting topics a little bit on you here, as you collaborate with both sides, with the hiring managers and the candidates, so when you prepare both sides for that first interview, and interviewing is such a difficult, area for anyone to master. I've never seen anyone. I've seen some people more or less to be good at it. And it's an art and a science in a way that takes a lot of practice, so many years of experience. Tell us a little bit about that experience, about maybe some practical recommendations that really help you improve your batting average as you prepare the hiring manager for that first interview, setting those expectations, and also your candidate, which in your case, a lot of very successful, accomplished executives. How do those conversations go? What are some of the things you've learned in the past?
Well, first of all, I kind of view myself as a professional yentl, so I'm making marriages and relationships happen. And so, honestly, that onboarding starts with the first hello with a candidate, as well as even with a client. So it's really important when we go into a search that we do that intake with all of the stakeholders. And if my hiring manager just wants to kind of do a quick, I just need to fill a position, or it's confidential or whatever, it is really important to gain the stakeholder involvement of who all that person will be interfacing with. So we do an extensive intake just to gather those expectations and build expectations. And you're really even socializing their involvement from the beginning So there's kind of a shared accountability for the success of whoever is onboarded. And then again, it's that courting process with the candidate throughout that process. We sometimes joke, it's, you know, we have them see the cast of thousands because it's the number of stakeholder interviews that they usually will go through at that level. But in today's world with complex matrixed organizations and the varied stakeholders, it's so critical that people are involved, other stakeholders are involved in that. So when they do show up for work, they're not going, who are you and why wasn't I involved in this decision? Why should I listen to you? They're already ready and prepared and welcoming them. And then from that onboarding standpoint, making sure that they have an opportunity to really understand how that organization works. You really want them bonding with a baby, so to speak, during that first year, and doing everything you can to tee up those relationships so that they can build those, so that they can be more effective with getting work done through all of those varied and contingent stakeholders.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, we could probably spend the rest of the episode talking about this particular area because it's a very interesting area for me because as I hire, as I interview a lot of candidates for my projects, for my groups, it's always fascinating to me to learn different strategies and things that really help, you know, to improve, especially that very first interview. Granted, it's a very short experience to make, you know, such determination for such a long-term commitment. So I think I appreciate some of the insights that you have shared. When you collaborate and work with your client companies, your partners, when we talk about innovation, I would imagine you spend a lot of time studying their culture, their leadership style, just overall environment. What are some of the recommendations you have for your client companies when it comes to building and fostering a culture of innovation through exceptional candidates, exceptional executives?
Yeah, it is really important to really understand the culture and what makes a candidate successful in that environment. But I also think it's really important that they have the conversational capacity to dialogue and accept different ideas and seeing what that threshold is for that. One of the things when a candidate goes in for an interview, when they do see the varied stakeholders, what really impresses a candidate is when they have seen varied stakeholders and they're getting the same message. So that's really critical for candidates to be attracted to an organization. Doesn't mean that, we'll always debrief and find out what they learned from the different stakeholders. I had somebody on an interview today and one of the stakeholders was actually, the candidate countless of that guy was a little toxic. And so, you know, recruiting it, you do want to put your best foot forward, but it also gives them a window into some of the challenges within the organization, because no organization are you going to go into and it's perfect. So we give feedback on both sides of, you know, back to the hiring manager and some of the things and suggestions about their culture. Of course, we're not trying to change their culture, but also wanting to make sure that the candidates are going to be successful in that environment and matching that type of personality and way they operate to that. But as far as bringing out innovation, it's really critical that there is that conversational capacity to be open, honest, and candid and have that dialogue. And be open to new ideas. I always think it's important that, we talk about, you know, what's the right strategy for bringing in new blood into the organization and getting new ideas into it. Sometimes you get organizations that have had very long tenured staff and they're a little bit resistant to change. And so it's good to have a build-buy strategy where you're promoting from within, but you're also integrating fresh talent, fresh ideas at a pace somewhat like baking a cake. When you're putting flour into the batter, you don't want to dump it all in at once or you're going to have a mess. So you want to kind of pepper it in, sprinkle it in so it kind of blends in with a consistency, and then you're transitioning and transforming that culture that way rather than in a big blast. And tearing it up.
Right. No, absolutely. Those are definitely interesting perspectives from that standpoint. As you work in very unique space of healthcare and, you know, with executives, what have you seen in terms of a very scarce skill set that a lot of companies demand, yet, you know, is not so readily available in a lot of the candidates that you work with? Can you talk a little bit about that? The reason I ask that is also because a good portion of Ivy podcast listeners are executives themselves, but also we have a good portion that are early stage career professionals and those entering the workforce. And they always ask us questions in the sense, what are some of the areas or skills that we should be investing in?
Right. Well, I honestly think that what most of my clients are looking for are those leaders that can really lead change management effectively, those initiatives to transform their businesses. People are growing and changing, and they need people that can do it at scale, as well as sustainability and hardwire some of those changes. And a lot of times that is, you know, they've demonstrated success building pilots, sustaining that, and then taking that out further into the organization for success. For your emerging talent that's coming into the workforce, for example, I'll just share a personal antidote. My daughter's 27. She's an accountant, a CPA with a Big Four company, and going virtual for her. Now, this is the, you know, 20-year-olds that are very connected to, you know, and wired. Found it very difficult during COVID to work from home and lead other first-year associates virtually to see when they were struggling and when they weren't. And I'll go back to my experience when I started during college, and I was on site, and I got to job shadow, I got to sit in the executive board, I got to be involved in a lot of projects. That's hard to do virtually, to gain that foundation. So for with the world changing with more remote and entry-level workers, I think it's real critical that they do have some of that physical contact and involved, you know, with their hands rolled up on site, working side by side with teammates to learn from others. I know my daughter had commented she would have never survived first year had it been virtual. You know, she just didn't know how that they did that. And then supervising those folks at that your early foundational point in her career, that was pretty substantial for her. She's back at work now and liking that better. And me, the baby boomer, like loved working remote. But I'd had those foundational experiences where I had that in the, you know, the back of my mind. But again, I think as we move into a different world with changing technology, remote workforce, and emerging leaders from the different generations, I do think it's important that we don't commoditize the workforce and dehumanize it. So as you mentioned, recruiting is an art. And I always say recruiting is a contact sport. And sometimes so is work. And so it is real important to have, you know, there's nothing better than, you know, a job shadow with somebody where you're actually sitting next to somebody and being involved in that conversation, just hearing that and even the nuances. Even when I worked, for example, in Latin America, I had to speak Spanish, I had to speak Portuguese, and it wasn't my first language, but the language that I really relied on was body language, and that is the universal language. So picking up those subtle nuances of what's occurring in a meeting, reading someone's body language can tell you a lot intuitively. So I think those are some of the things that we need to focus on in the future and be cognizant of not losing that.
Right. Absolutely. I love those examples, especially where your daughter was going through. It's very interesting. When, you know, as you collaborate with a lot of organizations, especially through current period with companies trying to structure their operations in different ways when it comes to hybrid model of bringing the workforce back to physical locations, you know, dealing with employee anxiety and stress, all of that stuff. What have you been observing as you collaborate with different companies? I get a lot of questions like that from, you know, the guests that I host on the podcast, most of whom are executives themselves, from, you know, from some very large organizations. And it's a valid concern. It's a valid question. What are other companies doing? What are some of the things that you've seen others succeed in? What are the different plans? Any thoughts there?
I think it goes back to, you know, you've got a virtual reality and it's a different dynamic than being face to face. And it goes back to, again, that being a contact sport, the human element is really being present with people and following up. Those leaders that I've seen very successful in the virtual world have made sure that they have had those connections on a regular basis with their staff. Not only just talking about their work, but their personal and their emotional well-being. So wellness is a huge factor, especially in healthcare, but I think it transcends every industry, just our own personal, emotional, you know, mind, body, and spirit. And so I think it's critical that employers connect with their employees on a personal basis. Again, going back to my first experience, we were like a family, you know, people watched out for each other. People knew, you know, who had dogs, who had kids, what was going on in people's lives. And I think that, you know, we can't lose that when we start to dehumanize the workforce and we just go to the masses, the individual gets lost, as well as then the engagement, the retention. People want to be wanted and want to be valued as a person, and being right. present is very key to that.
I love that. You know, it seems so simple yet oftentimes overlooked. Very simple strategies as such is, you know, very powerful. So thank you for highlighting that.
Sure.
The last segment of each episode, I love to focus a little bit more on you in terms of what are the different sources that you utilize on a daily basis when it comes to content diet. With so much information being thrown at us, how selective are you with what you let your mind be exposed to? And at the same time, staying ahead of the competition, staying ahead of the curve in the industry. Sure. What are you using to stay ahead, to learn, and for self-actualization?
Right. Well, first of all, every person is a story. So I have a lot of contact with people and I love people's stories. But as far as content, you know, online, I keep up with the industry trades. So in my business, it's Modern Healthcare, it's Becker's. I get a barrage of other things that come in through the media. But also, I'll pick up other industry trades, like my daughter's Journal of Accountancy, HR Magazine. So I'll read those things to see what other industries are doing in that world of work. I love, you know, daily, I think everyone needs their spiritual canon. So for me, the Bible is really important. It's timeless and it speaks to every situation. So that's really helpful for me to stay grounded. But other content, you know, I will usually send out gifts as welcome new hire gifts. And usually, you know, I have a book of 10 top reads that kind of cover everything. And from conversational capacity to 90 day, you know, first 90 days on the job, the art of listening, transitions, build bridges, and that really is, you know, kind of change management. Of course, I love Larry Bossidy, execution. I have a whole library, but I do read about 6 books at one time. So I'm a glutton when it comes to content.
Wow, 6 books at a time, which you couldn't have set me up any better for the last question that I have. What are you currently reading? Maybe all 6 of them. And what is one book that you always recommend to others and why is that?
Okay. Well, one book that I really like, I think is pertinent for today. It was written earlier by a gentleman that was kind of early prophet in the 21st part of the 20th century. It's called Letters of Lake Como. And it is reflections on technology and the human race. And I don't think that, you know, it's so much a book about the past as it's written to the present and what we can do as we look at technology and how it impacts the human person. So I think that's a great read. I've got one, I'll be honest with you, I haven't read yet, but I've got it on my shelf, and it's called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. So I'm excited to read that book. I've heard a lot of good things about that. Blue Ocean Strategy is one I've always enjoyed as well. And Transitions is just an excellent book, timeless. Sometimes I don't think that there's anything new out there that hasn't been written, it's just been repackaged. And so I'm kind of plagiarize all of that and kind of embody all of that.
Right. No, I love these recommendations. And, you know, as you mentioned, timeless, because these days there's so many books, but what I find challenging is, you know, 8 out of 10 books that I've been reading, I haven't gone past half the book. A lot of that could be consolidated probably into an article form. So it's an interesting perspective, but I definitely appreciate those recommendations for our listeners. We'll make those, we'll list those out as titles in the show notes. Sue, I can't thank you enough for your time today. Very short and powerful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit from this. You were very generous with some of your advice. What I love doing with all the guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year to see how much have changed, transpired. We will revisit the conversation that we had a year ago and kind of just make fun of what we had discussed. So I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Well, thank you so much. It's been my pleasure and honor.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.